Hello, everyone, and welcome to our very serious political news show. We do it every day. It's a serious look at serious news with myself and a man possibly even more serious, Brett Ehrlich. Brett, how's it going?
Hi. Today on Strabismus Weekly, cheating. Are you also seeing someone else on the side?
See, okay, that seems crazy, but is what Brett just did any weirder than a random 5 seconds on Lou Dobbs? Seriously, it's
oh my god! Did you cover that? I forgot about that. Did you cover?
You know what I'm talking about, though.
If he gets reelected, he'll be the greatest world leader since Alexander the Great.
But not just that. The way in which he did it, he didn't have enough sycophants in his like grab bag at the ready. Sycophanciness. In his grab bag at the ready, where he could just come up with like bootlickingisms to say immediately. Those things he said, he read quotes from his book that he'd already written about Donald Trump.
It's crazy. Well, so what, which is okay, if we're playing ridiculous grift like comparisons, which is crazier? Quoting your own book multiple times on your show, or no, like Charlie Kirk making a book out of your tweets?
So I don't think any of those things is crazy on its own. And that's the kind of non-double standard you'll hear from Brett Honesty Ehrlich over here. I think both of those things are fine. I think reading from your own book is fine, but only if it's statistics or if you're quoting someone you interviewed in your book. Yes. And then I loved in the old Borders in Thousand Oaks, California, by the register was like these little tiny easy reading books. And really, that practice of taking your books and moving it into your quips and moving it into book form, that dates back to Nietzsche. So I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Not the anti-Semitism.
Do you, so if it's okay to read from your books, can I read from my book, a zombie Western fantasy horror? Can I read from that? I think it has a lot to say about
the balance of power. How much is it going to cost me to get a copy of your book?
I cannot tell you how worried I am that at some point one of those copies will be stolen and spread. That would not be good for me. But anyway, okay, so here's what we're going to do. More of this, but then probably some news too. And you know what we've got for you? Not only do we have garbage people today, we also have, I apologize, I'm falling apart. I swear it's not coronavirus. So you know how I've been saying for literally months that it's frustrating to me that despite the fact that TDR has been around for literally years, we're never gonna get a t-shirt. You know what? I found a way around it. I've circumnavigated it, Brett. And we've got this, the take out the garbage in 2020 shirt. That's now garbage people. It's mine. I took it. It's ours, actually. It's Dragon Squad's shirt. So that's what it is. You may not say it on the website, but that's canonical. So go out and buy it. Wear it on Fridays. Take out the trash.
Go out and buy. No, no, no. Here's a challenge.
Shop CYT.
Here's a challenge. And if not, we have an old editor that I used to work with. Her husband has a screen press or one of those like silk screen business. Get that shirt. And then take, if you need it, I'll send you the high res version of the Dragon Squad emojis, or if you have this skill, make it yourself. And screen and silk screen next to the garbage, silk screen a giant dragon coming out of it with John's face.
Okay, let's do that. That's easy. That's easy. Okay, that'll be great. Okay, so here's the thing. I can already tell that. Okay, I don't want to look directly at the producer in this Skype because she's probably very mad at me because we
totally
haven't done any news yet.
She's totally.
So here's what's gonna happen. Okay, I was worried. Well, then Marissa's definitely mad. Okay, so everyone hit the like button if you're already here. Lots of you are, so please do that. Share the stream. We're gonna respond to your tweets and everything. That'll be coming up soon. But I want to get right to the news because we've got a ton, and no Friday show has ever ended early. Now with that, let's do this. A little bit of good news for you. Donald Trump woke up this morning and it was a whiny morning for him, with him tweeting, one of the worst polls in 2016 was the Fox News poll. They were so ridiculously wrong. Fox said they were going to change pollsters, but they didn't. They totally oversampled Democrats to a point that a child could see what is going on. And he sees it, so, you know, proof positive. Rasmussen, which was accurate at 52%. Now, really fast, Rasmussen, in the immediate lead up to the general election, was pretty accurate on the overall nationwide vote. That's true. They had Clinton winning it by a point or two, and she indeed won it by a point or two. So they were right. That doesn't mean their evaluation of his favorability number, which is the number he's citing there, is accurate. So a little tricky bazicky thing there. But what is he whining about? What is going on with the Fox polls? Well, it turns out he was starting his morning the way he always does, literally watching Fox and tweeting about what they said. And he happened across these images. For instance, this poll, Fox News for Pennsylvania, with the Biden-Clinton preference. So you see, for Biden, he's currently up by 7 points. And that was the vote Clinton-Trump back in 2016, with Trump winning very narrowly there. Now there's this big gap, at least according to them. And not just Pennsylvania, but you have Ohio, where they have Biden up by 5 when Trump won by, looks like, 7.5 points or so. And so they show some images, and the most powerful person in the world begins whining on social media about it. Brett, what do you think?
He's such a little baby boy. He needs a banky, he needs a sucker. And if he's looking for suckers, by his own definition, he should find veterans, because he called them losers and suckers, and we've already forgotten that. Yeah, this is good. So it is also just me vacillating between sheer panic and this aspiration that eventually I'll have some kind of relief in my life where I can go back to, like, the fight I'm willing to have, which is like the fight that's become a luxury at this point, which is like changing a system that I'm familiar with into a system that I want to be better, as opposed to this nutty free for all that's happened now. But I think that Biden should be up way, way more in his home state of Pennsylvania. I think that this is in Ohio. I want Biden to be up way, way more. Yes. I wonder what they're doing. I need them to be up by
campaign-wise.
Yeah, campaign-wise.
Apparently not much. I mean, there was a big expose a couple of weeks ago, but the lack of campaign offices and battleground states. Just a couple of days ago, there was a big one on in Florida. The Republican, the Democratic advantage over Republicans in new voter registration is still there, but it's significantly less than it's been in past elections, because they're really not going door to door, and that's hugely frustrating. Now, if this Ohio number is accurate, and it's one poll, maybe it's not, that is a massive swing. Probably not as much as it should be, considering all that Donald Trump is and has been, let alone the pandemic. But it is a swing, and these are just individual polls, and we don't cover them constantly. But you know what? It's Friday, and this is good news. So let's just, like, let it soak in. And in particular, why might Ohio have swung so much? So let's take a look at individual issue areas. Joe Biden versus Donald Trump. Who do Ohioans trust to do a better job? Coronavirus, there's a 14-point gap. I cannot believe there's 38% of people in Ohio are like, more of Trump's coronavirus strategy, please. Sign me up for that. But SCOTUS nominations, Joe Biden has a nice little lead there. Policing and criminal justice, Biden's up by 2, despite the fact that that is like 60% of Trump's campaign strategy is attacking Biden on that particular area. And the economy is the thing that still goes towards Donald Trump.
Yeah, but that the economy, yeah. And you pointed out in the previous thing, the policing, the SCOTUS nominations, basically what folks expect Republican to be good at, and what they expect the Democrat to be good at. The coronavirus response is provably better, because Trump, we just suck so bad at it. And I think that Biden needs to run with that. I know that Trump is going to say, well, I mean, he has kind of said things like this, saying things basically like, Biden wants to fix coronavirus by shutting down the economy. What are you going to do for work in that situation? But in the meantime, the Democrats are trying to shore up that argument by going to kind of revitalize talks with the Republicans with a $2-point-something trillion relief bill that we'll hear about in the coming weeks. I do want to point out Donald Trump. The one thing that Donald Trump is hilarious in here, he wants Fox to change its pollster. A Fox pollster is responsible for pretty much every rhetorical win that Trump is taking advantage of right now, laying the groundwork by doing essentially, like, Frank Luntz is the Fox pollster that I know when I think about pollsters. And Frank Luntz is the guy that doesn't just poll like, who do you want to vote for? But he does the work that Democrats never do, which is go try to find terms that you can repeat ad nauseum until people are like, oh, I've just accepted your framing linguistically, which sets like death tax, all those different terms that the Republicans are so good at, that the Democrats are so god awful at. And I think defunding the police is one of those terms that that just tees it up for Trump to do something terrible with. Now, do I agree with basically rebuilding policing around good police? Yes. And do I think police are overburdened? Yes. Do I think we need systemic change? Yes, but saying defund the police just kind of sets it up for that. But Trump is has relied nonstop on the work of the Fox pollster to 100% pick up the shambles of American democracy and run with them.
Yeah, or at the very least, those little like voter panels that they do, where you don't have the breadth necessarily, but you can really dig in, ask follow-up questions and things like that. 100%. There's other polling I could show you of battleground states. I'm not gonna, because it just gets into the weeds, but one of the takeaways is that he still maintains his lead, especially in certain states among men. Like in Texas, he's up by like 16 points among men, which is just maddening. But among women in a lot of these states, he's down fairly significantly too. And you know, in defense of Trump, he has worked very hard to turn the women of America against him. So he's getting what he paid for there.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
I would hope at this point it would be obvious that the Republicans are not just going to do the right thing, whether it's on the Supreme Court or literally any other issue area. But unfortunately, it's not just, you know, the older elected Dems in leadership that seem to believe that that's how this might play out. Even people like Cory Booker had this to say.
No, we don't appear to have the votes to do anything about it right now. We still don't know where everyone stands. And so it's going to be a long shot. We're going to do everything we can to try to appeal to their sense of decency. That you can't just a matter of months ago, as Lindsey Graham did, say that there is a standard, say that you uphold it, tell people to use your words against you on this matter, and then have them suddenly flip and change that. As we said earlier, this is delegitimizing and politicizing the Supreme Court in a way that will be so damaging to our democracy. Again, you cannot have two different standards, one for Donald Trump and one for Barack Obama, because in that case, what you're doing, in effect, is giving giving Barack Obama a three-year term in terms of the Supreme Court, and President Trump a five-year term. And so we are really at a painful moment right now, and I think Democrats are going to continue to appeal to the sense of honor that when someone gives their word, as Lindsey Graham did, that they can't just break it.
Yeah, but like they can, and they are. It already happened. This isn't some hypothetical. We're not thinking about, you know, if the Republican Party maintains this trajectory in a decade or two, I might not be able to fully trust them. No, they're lying constantly. That double standard you talked about, we already have that. And the double standard he laid out is actually more positive than the double standard we might have gotten if Hillary Clinton had won, when Ted Cruz was saying if she wins, no new Supreme Court justice, not like election year, no justice. No, literally, she will never get a Supreme Court justice. That seat will never be filled. And Cory Booker, who, like, I'm not as opposed to Cory Booker as some people. I obviously disagree with him very strongly on certain issues, but I like him on some things. Like, I don't know if that's just how you vocalize your surrender, that you're still processing it, but saying that the Dems are going to continue to appeal to the Republicans' honor is effectively a meaningless statement, except in that it means that they're not going to do anything substantively to actually stop this.
And this is a very simple thing to diagram. There are two ways, there are two fronts on which you need to fight. The first, and I know two fronts is not a really good idea, but most people don't know about the second front. So the first way you need to fight it is the rhetorical fight. And that's what the Democrats are trying to do. They're trying to do a rhetorical decency appeal. Is it good? Is it bad? I think it's bad, but that's what they're doing. What they don't understand is something the Republicans understand very well, which is the mechanical fight, the legal fight, the letter of the law. What are the rules enshrined in our doctrine going to let us get away with? And that's what the Republicans rely on more. The Democrats rely on the floofy, let's make an argument about decency. The Republicans are just like, so the rules actually allow me to get away with a lot more stuff. And so I'm going to do what I can to win this rhetorical battle. But what the Republicans looked at, I mean, they abandoned the spirit of the law a long time ago. Like the spirit, they were the first to do it. The spirit of how they framed the Supreme Court justice nominating process was that the president picks the Supreme Court nominee, and then the Senate gets to see if there's something horribly wrong with that person.
Yeah.
And if there's something horribly wrong with the person, they get to advise and consent. They don't get to pick the Supreme Court justice. They only get to say if there's something really wrong. That's the spirit of it. But when it comes down to it, Mitch McConnell said, I have a vote on it and I have the Senate, so I can just vote against it. They abandon the spirit of what everyone had done before. They make all these, like, sounds like you're watching baseball when they give you the statistics. It's like the same way they're like, no one in the bottom of the ninth has pitched a curveball strike against, you know, Ryan Howard. It's like, well, no one in the last year of a split Congress has been able to do that. Like, that's how they give you the stats. And it's just BS because it's so damn boring and they're trying to make it sound cool. But exactly, the Democrats need to start fighting that second way. Because that second way, that way of fighting based on what the procedures allow you to do to get what you want, they need to do it. And AOC and company released a memo about exactly how to do that yesterday. And that is to use the budget appropriations process, the budget, the continuing budget resolution or whatever, the various processes at their disposal to just delay the vote. Because that's exactly what the Republicans did. They abandoned the spirit of the nomination process and relied on the rules. And the rules say there's a bunch of stuff that you can do, but for some reason the Democrats aren't doing that. And that's because they just don't want to cop to the fact that the tacticians on the Republican side are just better at it and more shameless. And this is what you have to do. And what are they worried about? They're worried about the American people figuring out that there's some, like, sly in the weeds, like, you know, I guess like technocratic, or I don't know, like these, a way of doing these things by adhering to like these obscure laws. No, you just need to say, no, we're following the rules and we're gonna stop it because of what you did last time, and just keep fighting on that. And then the last point is, what the hell do they need this other justice for? This is different from when Ginsburg dying is different from Scalia dying, because when Scalia died, it was 4-4. Now it's 5-3. You already have the justices you need to accomplish all of that stuff. Everything they're fighting for now is moot. Unless you have so little faith in your legal argument that you need a 6-3 advantage and really a psycho Handmaid's Tale nominee to push it through.
Well, if you have no faith in your legal argument, or no faith that you will maintain control of the Senate and win the presidency, potentially, like, you would want to rush it through if you fear the future, I guess, or you'd be pragmatic even if you think there's a good chance of losing, which there is at the very least a good chance. But yeah, I agree. They don't fight in that way. They don't even seem willing to acknowledge. Like Dianne Feinstein, she still talks as if it's the 70s or something. And you know, there's like one or two bad eggs in the Republican Party, but surely some of them will be smart. Democrats have been circulating a memo over the past day about some of the different tactics that can be taken in the Senate and in the House to possibly delay the replacement of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So I just want to go through a few of those. There are more, but they're even more in the weeds than the ones we're going to go over with. So in the Senate, they can speak at length, very, very bold, objecting to routine consent agreements. So these are sort of procedural hurdles that can take a little bit of time to clear through. Yeah, exactly. Objecting to lifting quorum calls, which is, it's especially significant because, you know, if they can be calling people back to DC, that is both time consuming its own right and also an opportunity cost for embattled Republican senators fighting for re-election. And apparently that's something that McConnell has been warning Senate Republicans to watch out for, saying, this is Senator Hawley, the Republican, said, McConnell has told us that there might be a lot of back and forth that will require physical voting. There are things like raising points of order, filing cloture, you know, those little tricky parliamentary procedure things that can take a little bit of time. But there doesn't seem to be much reason to believe that, especially with the expedited hearing or maybe no hearing at all schedule that they've been talking about, that that'll actually be enough to stop it from going through. It might delay it a little bit. It might draw more attention to it, and it might harm some of those Republicans that I guess the idea would be then maybe one or two of them could turn against trying to ram someone through so that they can be freed up to go campaign. That to me seems pretty unlikely, but they're at least producing a little bit of an opportunity cost for this.
And that's what Republicans do all the time. I mean, oh my, and this is stuff that you've gotta do. They just have to do it. Again, like what are they thinking? They think there's gonna be some way that they can get through to the American people. Oh my gosh, everyone, they're objecting to lifting quorum calls. Ah, how dare they? And then you just look at them like they're psychotic and say, what, you mean we wanna follow parliamentary procedure, which says there need to be 51 people here?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's so inconvenient for you to have to come back and do your job.
Well, okay, so I agree, and I think they're gonna try to pitch it as the Dems being ridiculous, but I think that's gonna be hard. But what about on the House side? So you have things like filing war powers resolutions, which have to be taken up at a certain amount of time. Amendments between houses can slow things down, but the big one is hypothetically impeachment that could take a bit of time. I feel like if the Dems did that, the Republicans would lose their minds.
Yeah, I think they need to do any and all of these things, because why the hell not? I mean, this is something that does nothing. Adding this extra justice does not lose them the majority of the Supreme Court for the Republicans.
Well, as someone pointed out, I don't think in the near term this is why they might do it. But while this doesn't modify the vote that would come for something like basically canceling the election, maybe for the ACA, like just totally nullifying it. It might be 4-4 right now, depending on how Roberts is feeling on any given
day. Well, that's exactly my point, is this is only for stuff like that. This is not when Trump gets in front of everybody and says, we need 9 for this vote because they're ruining the vote. No, I mean, all this does is remove from Roberts that feeling he has had and exercised frequently that he is the steward of historical decency on the Supreme Court. So he is the one who steps in, and everyone was wondering about it after Kennedy left, but he's the one who steps in and goes, I think we have to uphold this based on this one thing. You know, we'll let, and he's done it already on the ACA. He has been the one who's like, this is technically a tax.
Yeah.
So it's under there. And that I think is just him saying like, listen, this was such a landmark accomplishment for everyone in America. It has never been done before, and it was done legislatively, so with a filibuster proof majority. So I mean, I gotta let it stay.
This is just the latest in a long chain of incredibly divisive Supreme Court replacement conversations. There's particular reason in this case why it's so bad. But what if we could come up with a way to fix it going forward? It's not impossible, actually. Ro Khanna and others are putting forward a bill that aims to do that. And he tweeted about that bill, saying you can't face a national crisis every time there's a SCOTUS vacancy. I'm introducing a bill to impose 18-year term limits on future justices, long enough to influence judicial trends, but not so entrenched. Every president appoints two per term. Thoughts? And I have some. This reminds me, I didn't go back and check, but I believe this is basically what John Oliver laid out a year or two ago about possible reforms to the Supreme Court. And it's not to say that there wouldn't be issues with this as well, but there's, I think, a lot to like in this. And if Republicans were anything other than being crazy right now, they should look forward to this too, because then winning the presidency gives you a predictable amount of influence over the Supreme Court. Not a crazy amount. And if you only get one term, you're definitely not going to take control of it. If you, like, even if you get two terms, you're not going to have a clear majority just based on that. It is a very fair, gradual, period of change to the Supreme Court. This bill, by the way, would also exempt everyone who's already on the court. So, like, how nice of a gesture is that? This just seems so much more reasonable. I doubt that many Republicans are going to go for it regardless. But Brett, what do you think?
There is, yes, I like this idea. I think it is a very helpful way to reimagine norms that seem like they've been around forever, but they haven't been around since the beginning. Like, what we consider to be how the Supreme Court works, it's not always been that way. And that is the trick. That's the reason the Supreme Court looks like it did over your shoulder when it started. It's like, look at these big ancient Greek buildings that were built in 1786, or like whatever. Like, it is classically inspired. It is not from antiquity. Like, that is the trick of the Supreme Court. And I've talked about how we put robes on them, so they're just floating disembodied heads of judgment and no emotion. But this gives us the opportunity to reexamine those things and do something that I think is a theme everyone can get behind, which is asking, is America living up to the promises it's written in its documents? It's made promises. We all know it didn't live up to those promises. Like, there was slavery when they said, you know, all men are created equal. That is a promise they made that they didn't keep. And we have striven as a country to have it hold up its end of those promises. But here, yes, I like the spirit. Now, this ties the Supreme Court to the outcomes. This kind of seems like it ties the Supreme Court to the will of the people, because the people elect the president elects these folks, and this is it refreshes every so often. But the president is not the result of the will of the people. It hasn't been for a Republican in a very long time. Getting Bush into the White House, most people didn't want that, right? Most voters didn't want that.
Getting not the Trump, first time at the very least. Yeah.
That's what I said. Getting him into the White House. Most people didn't do that. And then Trump getting into the White House. Most people didn't want that. So we are tying this to, like, oh, the president seems to go back and forth. But the will of the people, I mean, that's where it's weird. That's where it gets weird. So yes, I like this exercise, and I mean, it just came out for me, anyways. I didn't see the John Oliver thing, and I've been reading through it. I like that everyone gets two, and that circumvents this whole court packing thing.
Well, and I would tie it even more explicitly to that. I think, and it's apparently not up to me. We need more dragons for it to be up to me. They should. The going strategy should be, we're going to do this reform, or we're going to pack the court however much we want, among other things, by the way. You think this is radical? No, we're going to show you radical. You can have this, which you know is reasonable and doesn't even fundamentally change the situation, sort of on average. It's already basically that you get this 4-year period, you maybe get one, you maybe get two or whatever, but it stops you from like salivating over the prospect of an elderly judge dying. That would be nice. And I'm sure there could be provisions for if someone were to preemptively retire or to pass, that would take one of your two slots or something like that. You could work all of this out, or we're going to actually make the court representative of the country, which it is not and has not been maybe ever. So you get one of those two options. That's what we should do. Ro Khanna is coming out with a very reasonable version of this. Anything beyond that that is needed is going to seem less reasonable, but it's really up to them. They can support something like this, or they can force the hand of the Democrats. Maybe not the Democrats we have now, but the Democrats who are going to take out the Democrats we have now. They will be the ones that will put into effect these reforms.
Yeah, and by the way, weird to be in America and say like, you get to do this position for life.
It is, and it's not normal, by the way. Someone in the chat said, I think it might have been Alyssa, said that in Germany that the terms of office are 12 years. It's just not the norm. In constitutions written in the last 200 years or so, no, generally you don't give people lifetime appointments. It is perfectly reasonable. And by the way, constitutionally, Ro Khanna's bill involves they are retired from the Supreme Court at the end of that period, and then they go back to other courts. They're still having a lifetime appointment, just not on the most important body. And so this is 100% reasonable. I want to have Ro Khanna on to talk about it. It needs to happen at the very least. Something needs to happen. This is the ground floor from my point of view. Donald Trump made an announcement in regards to American seniors. I want you to take a look at this. And as he's announcing it, try to figure out what it is that he's doing here.
The America First Healthcare Plan includes another historic provision to benefit our great seniors. Under my plan, 33 million Medicare beneficiaries will soon receive a card in the mail containing $200 that they can use to help pay for prescription drugs. Nobody's seen this before. These cards are incredible. The cards will be mailed out in coming weeks. I will always take care of our wonderful senior citizens. Joe Biden won't be doing this.
At that same address, as he's he's politicizing every step of the way, the continued battle over healthcare policy, he also announced that he is going to be, I swear to God, sending $200 cash cards to 30 million seniors before the election so that they can one time save a little bit of money on their prescription medicine and things like that. No sort of permanent systemic change, like a debit card to seniors right before the election. So he definitely cares about our seniors. And anyway, in terms of this being nakedly political, the next sentence after he announced he was doing it was, I will always take care of our seniors. Joe Biden wouldn't do this. Just to be sure about how political and related to the election this is, Brett.
There's so much about this. This is a Florida play. This is a play in Florida where they are upset. This is something I was thinking about pitching for Main Show and I wasn't sure, but essentially like at the same time that Trump is trying to hand out $200 to grandma, grandpa so that they can get $200 off of whatever, he's giving them money to go vote for him, essentially pretty explicitly here. You've got the Republicans looking and saying like, oh my God, just because there's people offering to pay the poll tax that Republicans have put on former felons in Florida, that's a bribe to go vote. It's the double standard that's so stupid and so ridiculous. The difference between this and the Florida felon thing is that the people of Florida voted to allow folks who have paid their debt to society by going to prison for the felonies that they were convicted of. That 60% of Floridians were like, yeah, go ahead and vote. 60% of them. And it was the Republicans who put the poll tax in saying, well, all those extra fines that are designed to be impossible for anyone to pay, you've got to pay those before you can go back to the polls.
Exactly.
And it's just that double standard that makes me so sick.
But in terms of the continuing legal challenge over Bloomberg apparently raising money to help pay that off, not using 0.00001% of his own wealth to instantly pay it off. For some reason, he has to raise the money from other people. That's amazing. The Republican Party there in Florida is saying, no, you can't do that. That's a violation of election law. But wait, what are you talking about? You're saying they can't get their vote back until we just want to make sure that they've paid their debt to society and paid off their things. It's not to stop them from voting or anything. We just think that they should pay that. Oh, somebody's paying it off? No, suddenly we don't care about getting the money anymore. Now it's no, we want them to not be able to vote. But you're 100% right. I will say though, while I pointed out that this is nakedly political, and I guess I'm being critical of it, it's not illegal. And it does sort of one time help some people for political reasons, but I can't even say that this is 100% wrong. The reason I'm doing this story is a reminder to people who think, I don't think there's many anymore, and they're probably not watching the show, that we can just willy-nilly hand over power to the other side. No, this is a reminder that once they get into power, they have near infinite tools to help keep themselves in power. This is an easy one. He could do this. It's not his money. He doesn't care how much it costs. He could do this in every state. He could do it to young voters if he wants to right now, because he's got the power to do it. Okay, so this is just a cautionary tale about when you put them in, it might be hard getting them out, because he can do things like this. I can identify it as nakedly partisan, but is that going to convince seniors in Florida to not vote against their interests? I don't know.
Well, also, the other part of that is they have infinite power to help you. And when they don't, it's just because they don't want to.
That's true. That's true.
This. Yeah. Like, you're also making the point that he could have at any time given you $200 to drive down to offset the ridiculously high prices for pharmaceuticals in this country. And he just hasn't. And the most, if you like Trump because he's such a good businessman, right? If you like him because of that, just know the Democrats are the ones who, and the folks like us are the ones who are fighting really hard to help lower the prices of prescription drugs. Mm-hmm. The person with the people with the plan and the potential support to actually make this happen are not the Republicans in Senate. It's the Democrats who are trying to make this happen. So the most baller thing you can do with Trump's $200 is take it and spend it and vote him out of office.
Exactly. Have that offset $200 in donations to local and state level candidates. How about that? Why is he doing this last minute? I don't know for sure, but it might be related to the fact that Biden leads Trump by double digits with senior voters over 65, a group no Democrat has even won in two decades. Now, will that be enough? Will that be enough specifically in Florida? I don't know, but it's probably on their radar.
And he's admitting that seniors who have the best healthcare in America still need help, because healthcare in America sucks that bad.
Progressive Group Midas Touch is out with a new ad, once again pointing out how horrendous Trump's management of the coronavirus pandemic has been, this time specifically when it comes to America's senior citizens.
We now know the disease. We didn't know it. Now we know it. It affects elderly people with heart problems and other problems. If they have other problems, that's what it really affects. That's it. But it affects virtually nobody. It's an amazing thing. It affects virtually nobody. It's an amazing thing.
Midas Touch is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
He said it. Affects virtually nobody, and his own little Trumpism, everything's amazing and strong, even if it's horrendous. He describes it as big and awesome. Yeah, it hasn't affected virtually nobody. It's killed 200,000 people, and many, many more people that it hasn't killed, it has maimed or forced to stay for extended periods of time in the hospital. The number of own goals, he won't be able to own goal himself soon, because the net will just be full of balls. Because every time he speaks, he just says another heartless thing.
I can't with your net is full of balls.
I don't understand. What? Do you not get sports stuff? I'm a sports guy. I do sports things. Anyway, but no, it's a strong ad and 100% fair. He has utterly failed, and his rhetoric is right up there with his actual performance in terms of how horrendous it is.
Yes. I can't.
You're gonna need to push past it, buddy.
Or you're, I'm right gonna say about something that worse. But you're not making it easy on me, John.
Make some sort of reference to like a late minute switch in the dugout or something. I don't know.
That's it. That's it. Yeah, no, that's, I can't, right? You're just gonna have to pick yourself up and bear down and get through this. But yeah, no, he is this is a great thing, and I missed that connection. I was too busy focused on the most obvious terrible thing that he said, which is he called the deaths of 200,000 people nobody, that I didn't figure out the specific senior facing thing, which is, yes, he just wrote off the vast majority of deaths by coronavirus. A category that he himself falls into.
Yep.
But you know, if he were to get it, who knows what would happen. We'll hope he has enough unicorn blood to keep, you know, drinking to feed his nonsense.
Yeah, he just drinks a cocktail of, like, you know, antibodied blood and bleach. So quick question though, let's tie together these last two stories. So it should be clear to senior citizens, who are the highest percentage group voters, I assume even more so in general than white evangelicals. He's saying, you know, if 200,000 mostly of all of you die, it doesn't matter. So that should seem kind of offensive if you're older. Or he's giving you a $200 card. Does that overpower it? Maybe it does for some, honestly. Right. I don't know. What do you think?
Life is cheap to this guy, and he thinks that he can make up for it. So this is a thing that I've had with Trump since the beginning. He's like that absentee father who is like, if you somehow he's not going to do anything for you. Everything he does is kind of an insult. And he's like, if you succeed despite him, he's like, it's because I taught you self-reliance. No. You're that guy who does terrible, horrible, no good, very bad things. And then thinks like, here's $200, buy yourself something nice. And I'm not even asking for forgiveness. I'm going to pretend I've always been great.
Yeah. Yeah. Protests continue around the country, especially in light of the functional lack of charges in the killing of Breonna Taylor. And as you might expect, where there are protests, there are acts of violence against those protesters. So first here is a cop seemingly purposefully going out of his way to run over a protester's head with his bicycle. So I don't understand how Americans are supposed to watch that, and then they're supposed to listen to people saying, don't riot, don't be unreasonable, don't be violent. Violence isn't the answer. That cop just thought, I'm going to stop in a couple of feet, but you know what I'm going to do beforehand? I'm going to run over a human skull. I mean, functionally, in terms of the imagery, crushing a human skull is sort of the most fascistic sort of thing you can do. And this individual thought, I'm going to be the guy. Not going to do it with my boot. I'm going to put the weight of my entire body in a bicycle over this human skull. And if this person dies, I don't care. I get to do it. What are the consequences going to be? Probably nothing.
It's just so, all these answers are so obvious. Like, I don't agree with your framing on, like, telling people not to riot and, like, because what your framing implies that it's okay to, like, riot. My point doesn't even get to that. My point is, like, listen, 93% of these protests are peaceful. So you're focusing on something that is so statistically rare. And within that statistical rarity, that's what I'm saying. And in that statistical rarity, we don't know. I mean, we've seen stories of police starting the violence. We've seen police just completely beat the crap out of and break the hand of a Navy veteran. We've seen them tackle people on bikes and put them into vans and take them God knows where. And we've seen a police officer run over the head of someone who was Tiananmen squaring that. Right?
That's all it was doing.
Doing a thing that we laud the student for doing and respect that motion in Tiananmen Square. And is Fox News going to play that clip over and over again to talk about the baddies, essentially? Nope. Like, if you're going to talk about protesters who are turned violent, why would you not talk about police officers who turned violent? And I think that's the simple solution, is just don't allow the violence, like, don't laud the violence. And that's it, because there's a lot of practical solutions that we can enforce here that the Daily Caller's coming around on, right? The Daily Caller was pretty silent and reported pretty straightforwardly about, like, you know, as a way to get clicks, I would say that the police arrested a CNN reporter, but didn't call for lawsuits until their own reporters were arrested by Louisville PD. So the Daily Caller then threatened a lawsuit. So now let's hold them to their word, keep them on our side, and try to constructively work toward the reforms that we want. That obviously Americans by and large are familiar with the concept of the bad cop, as in good cop, bad cop, are familiar with dirty cops, because every police movie that we love is the good cop getting rid of the bad cop. So let's do that. Let's all be those people. That's the solution. Yeah. And it gets so mired in this, like, why wouldn't they riot? Why wouldn't they do this? Why wouldn't the police hit and shoot someone? Why wouldn't this guy go shoot? It's just let's do the police reforms that aren't this like horrible.
I think you're lumping a lot of things in there. And I wasn't encouraging it. I was saying you cannot do things like this and then be surprised when people feel like that is their only recourse. But in regards to this particular thing, like, maybe the Daily Caller, it'll be a durable, you know, change. I kind of doubt it. I mean, I just doubt it. I don't see it happening that they don't immediately go back to supporting whatever state violence the state chooses to
But this is how those arguments need to go. Like, we always complain.
You made the argument. We always complain about
people not letting it go. Why do we let it go? Like, pick it up, go with it. I still hear Benghazi. I still hear the Clinton Foundation trending. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, that's true. Until recently. And by the way, in terms of yesterday, whether they're gonna, like, you think like Tucker Carlson's gonna play that video? He's definitely not gonna play that video. They have to talk about the $30 U-Haul, you know, and how it took a shadowy billionaire behind the scenes to give you, you know, a couple bucks so you can buy a truck anywhere you want. No, that's what they'll do. I mean, they're not even gonna talk about, the Guardian's got a story of pro-Trump activists ahead of the Portland rallies communicating and planning violence. It's all there. We've talked about that sort of story so many times, but no, it's not gonna be mentioned. The U-Haul is the story, I guess. In any event, the bike officer who did that has been placed on leave. I don't know exactly what that means. For all I know, that means he gets a little vacation, still gets pay. Worst case scenario, he goes work and works at a different department. This will be one act of violence from this cop that will someday be cited when he shoots and kills someone. And we look back and say, oh, there had been warning signs, but they didn't do anything. Now we always focus on when the murder happens, but we also get to see the paths along the way.
And those are the specific, I'm glad you said that. Those are the specific reforms we need to enact. And I, like, in LA, like, the district attorney's office has been trying really hard to get the sheriff's office lists of dirty cops that Villanueva just rehired. Like, those are the things that we need to rally behind.
Yeah. And by the way, the protester was apparently uninjured. I would love to know the definition of uninjured. Didn't die, didn't have a skull fracture. Fine, I don't think you can ride over someone's head and there's no injury, but maybe I'm wrong. But he was arrested and there were a dozen other arrests. So they can't arrest people quickly for certain types of crimes. Something serious like laying in the road and being run over, shooting, killing someone, that takes 6 months to even think about. Far from where we're filming this, actually, a few blocks east of Sunset Boulevard, we had the latest, just the latest instance of a car deciding that protesters are nothing more than speed bumps. Take a look at this. So I apologize, Brett, if I got the geography wrong there, but I believe it was in Hollywood. In any event, it's just another one of these. It seems like you could do it every couple of days. Someone decides, no, my car is a deadly weapon that I'm going to use to take out these protesters. And that wasn't the only one. Literally in Hollywood or in LA yesterday, we don't have the video of the other one, but there was a Prius as well, not far from there. It's become so normalized. This was, up until a couple of years ago, this was basically ISIS did this. That's basically what happened. International terrorists would get a car and they drive through crowds of people. But now it's just, oh, I guess they were delayed. I guess that truck wanted to get somewhere and these protesters were delaying them by exercising their rights. So was it really so wrong for him to run someone down? I'm assuming the person survived, but they can never know when they decide to hit them with a literal truck.
Yes, this is horrifying and unacceptable. And what's equally as unacceptable is Republican politicians who are trying to make this activity legal.
Yeah,
you know, we need to protect the Kenosha shooter who goes and brings a gun into a protest and shoots people. And we need to protect him. We need to protect people whose, I don't know, tires were scuffed by human flesh, but not the human flesh. Like, that's the problem. And coming into it with a partisan bent is unfair and un-American. It is a hatred toward America, what America should stand for all that they talk about how Democratic politicians hate America with these crazy non-logical leaps. This is running over protesters with your car and protesting. The right to protest is the first thing they added to the Constitution when they asked themselves, what should we explicitly protect? That's the first thing that they listed. Okay, it's the First Amendment. So they need to, this behavior is wildly unacceptable. And we need to find who drove the car, get an impartial jury to try the case, to you know, judge the case and find justice. But a lot of people who are talking about this aren't intent on actually finding justice. They're looking for some kind of weird marginal rhetorical win. And that's not okay.
And so many millions of Americans will never see video like that. They're just gonna watch Tucker Carlson play some more a fire burning in Seattle in late May. Like literally they just play the same fire every single time and then just say, this is probably demonstrative of what the protests are today. I'm not gonna say it, but I'm gonna imply it to you. That's what they do. That's what people think these things are because of that.
It's just prejudice. It's just trying to pretend. And it's like for me, what my solution I gave is a very specific solution based on a framework of justice. But what so many people want to do is find a way to just kick out of the conversation by pretending that a small number of people represents everybody. And that happens all the time, everywhere. And that's something that's natural for people to want to do in their everyday lives. Where it becomes despicable is people like Tucker Carlson and Fox News who their bread and butter is this. And when the individual, the transition of news broadcasting from something that loses money but provides value to something that makes money and tries to like mine value in really sketchy places that bring the mountain down. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. And that's where it is, not only on cable news, but also on local news, where literally they say if it bleeds, it leads. Mm-hmm. And as I've said already on today's show, like 93% of these protests are just people with signs.
Yeah, but which billionaire gave them the signs, Brett?
Oh, more of that later.
That's the story. Yeah. Yeah, and you mentioned Tucker Carlson. I didn't make a story out of it because I honestly, the only times I talk about him is when I have to because I don't like talking about him. But yeah, Tucker Carlson's that case against him by Karen McDougal was thrown out because they successfully made the case that nobody watching Tucker Carlson thinks that what he says is actual news or an expression of actual facts and all of that. It's the Alex Jones defense. That's all it is. He's playing a character. It's hyperbole. And so, but that's not actually what his fans think. They 100% think that what he says is fact. Anyway, frustrating, but I don't want to focus any more on him, so we're going to move ahead. It's the end of the week, and so it's time to take out the trash. Okay, so I've got me and Garbagey and Brett. And Brett, let's start with you. Who is your garbage person of the week?
I have two garbage people, but it's okay because it's more of a two-headed monster of garbageness. So here is Laura Ingraham and Ben Shapiro on Fox talking about how crazy Rachel Maddow has gone. We'll explain exactly why, but I also picked this because the word garbage is in it, so take a look.
One of the left's biggest media stars is reading the current situation as follows.
President now saying insistently that the election will not be decided by the voters, that he expects the Supreme Court, to which he is trying to appoint a new justice right before the election, he expects that it will be the Supreme Court which handles the question of who the next president is. And he expects that the conservative majority will throw out the ballots, and then we won't have to worry about any transition of power.
I'll ban the hyperbole notwithstanding. This is pretty standard now on the left.
It is. The manufactured garbage by which they have been saying for months that this election is going to be stolen by Trump, that it's going to be a coup. You had John Podesta gaming out what it would look like if Biden didn't accept a loss. Hillary Clinton has openly said there are no circumstances under which Biden should accept a loss. I mean, hell, they had Stacey Abrams trotted out as governor of Georgia at the DNC. And then they have the temerity to turn around and say that Trump is the threat to the institutions, that it's Trump who is going to generate some sort of constitutional crisis. I think it's pretty clear that Democrats are making way for an awful lot of chaos in the aftermath of this election.
Ben, thank you so much tonight.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that thing that whoever was going to be here was going to say that exact same thing. Thank you for being that cog, that squeaky wheel.
I do want to say that Marissa and Sophie in the and Norma, we were kind of, after I sent that in, we're like, when he moves, it's like, and this isn't my observation, it is like when you take a chicken and you move its body, but its head stays in the same place. He's like,
it's like his head is on like a dolly, like it's like perfectly like stabilized. Okay, yep.
It's like the queen walking downstairs. She like doesn't bounce. That's weird.
Teach them.
All right, so that's one part of it. So, but the specific thing that they call manufactured garbage is the part of Rachel Maddow's presentation that happens before she goes and analyzes stuff. It is just her summarizing what the president has said and done in the past, basically saying that he doesn't want people to vote. He wants to get rid of the ballots that they're sending out to people because it's coronavirus and they want to keep people safe. And then third, that he wants a Supreme Court justice to essentially side with him at the end of the day in a packed court from the Republicans, and then and essentially say that no, he has been okaying him to steal the election. Those are the three things that they're saying are manufactured garbage, but they're obviously not. Please take a look.
They had things, levels of voting that if you ever agreed to it, you'd never have a Republican elected in this country again.
Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transferal of power?
We want to get rid of the ballots, and you'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation.
So you're going to need 9 justices up there. I think it's going to be very important because what they're doing is a hoax with the ballots. They're sending out tens of millions of ballots unsolicited, not where they're being asked, but unsolicited. And that's a hoax. And you're going to need to have 9 justices. So.
But yeah, no, you're right. It's just, it's them saying they're crazy to cite what Trump is saying every day. I mean, like, you can say he's not serious or it won't happen, but he's definitely saying it. And we're responding to specific quotes from him. And the thing that makes it even more dishonest is that you have Laura Ingraham and Ben Shapiro there saying that they're being ridiculous to imply that this will be anything other than a totally standard, normal election. But both of them, when and if, and I'll say when Donald Trump does every one of the things we've been predicting he'll do, they want it and they will be defending it. If he says we're not taking the mail-in ballots, it's just day of, both of them are going to do monologues about how that's exactly what it needs to be. So they get to have their, you know, fascism and eat it too. They get to say how crazy they are to imply that the court's going to decide. And then someday they're going to be calling for the courts to decide. Let's make a note of me saying this right now, because we can play it. You know, it'll be a nice little footnote in the history of American democracy as we descend into fascism. But they're 100% going to do that and nobody doubts it.
Yeah, so, and it's strange to say, I take Ben Shapiro's point. Like, I wouldn't want to accept a corrupt vote. That's not crazy to say. I wouldn't want to accept a BS vote. Unfortunately, the way they're saying that this vote is BS is itself a lie. They're trying to manufacture all this doubt, saying that that the vote, that there's going to be large scale fraud in these votes. And that's just not the case. In the last 20 years, it's like 0.00006% proven fraud. The big story that they're passing around today is that, oh, there was a big trove of military votes that were thrown away, and every single one of them was a Trump vote. There were nine votes that they found. There's nine votes. And they had to rephrase and say actually only seven of them were. And Trump is trying to repeat this lie over and over again. And it's all BS.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And the thing is, look, if you are actually concerned about fraud in mail-in voting, or it taking too long, or there being uncertainty, or any of these things, like most of those concerns, though fake, could be mitigated by actually providing the funding necessary to make this thing work. And they're not doing that because they don't care. It's not that they have these concerns, it's that they want to say that they have these concerns, because saying it is convenient if it sets up stealing the election.
And also, by his own definition, then we should never accept a single vote from the red state of Utah, because that's what they do. Like, they send them out.
Exactly. Or the military abroad, or Trump, or all of his people who've done this exact same sort of voting. 100%. 100% garbage.
And just to reinforce that, what's her name, that Laura Ingraham is indeed garbage. We have a tweet of the thing we talked about earlier in the show, where she basically asked, who's paying for these U-Haul vans? I love this so much. It's like, I've done some investigation myself, and I've narrowed it down to someone who is above the age of 25, has a valid driver's license, and a working credit card. So obviously Soros.
Some people go to more than one protest. Some people have been protesting for months. They don't necessarily make their signs for each new protest. That does not necessarily mean that a Jewish billionaire in the shadows is taking over democracy, as they keep wanting to say.
But like, my mom talked to a neighbor that she has who turns off Tucker Carlson when my mom goes there for dinner, and in their small community with no COVID. But essentially, they go in and she turns it off because she's ashamed. She's ashamed that she watches it, but she says, with Biden, it's just going to be him, socialism, and Sarlous. And couldn't even say Soros right when asked to explain it.
I wasn't sure what
Sarlous
that was.
is a vintner in Central California. But like,
they're apparently screwed too.
They get it wrong. And I from what I unfortunately can see, is your garbage person. Like, does it matter? What do they do when confronted? They do this weird thing all the time that I just hope they take a minute and listen to us as we try to find some common ground, which should just be like accepting fact.
For my garbage person of the week, I have, it's gonna seem a little bit broad. It's humans. It's like, we have this image, and the image is the idea that we've gotten more advanced, but I'm gonna prove that it hasn't really worked out in non-physical ways. I have an example person, but the reason it's humanity is that I don't really care about the individual in this video. I don't like demonizing individuals. And the problem is certainly not just one person, as you're going to see. Garbagey has now been fed. So take a look at this video. And it has Donny O'Sullivan of, I believe, CNN, a CNN reporter, talking to Trump supporters about the misinformation they believe in, doing live fact checking. So take a look as a biker for Trump is live fact checked about one of the memes that he liked that hurt Biden.
Hey, well, this is fact checked. It's wrong because it's taken out of context. Like when Joe Biden fell asleep during a live interview on television.
He claimed that he fell asleep. I think that was an edited one, right? That was...
I didn't think it was. It looked pretty live to me with no cuts in it.
Joining us live this morning from New York. Hey, good morning. Wake up.
Yes.
Wake up. I
can't hear anything.
Okay. This is your wake up call, Harry.
Is this the video that you were talking about?
Could be, yeah.
Biden falling.
Should I watch it really quick?
Sure. So
this is Washington Post.
So an article there is saying that it was faked, but it looked real, right? I mean, it looked real.
Well, I mean, I definitely wouldn't doubt that it would happen.
Even if it is fake, does it change your opinion of Biden?
God, no. You got to sift through it. I missed that one, but it was a good laugh. It was a really good laugh, and like I said, I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, so he's not the garbage person. It's that how much better are the vast majority of Americans that they wouldn't have responded in multiple of the ways that he just did. I'll break down some of them, but Brett, it's that what's the point of fact checking when they don't care if it's true or not? They just like it. It's just fun, or it's nice, or it's convenient. It makes me feel good. It doesn't matter if it's reflective of anything.
I know you're making a rhetorical point. That is a rhetorical question. What's the point of fact checking? I can answer your rhetorical question, which is the point of fact checking is so that not everyone is fooled. And that is all of politics. And Trump understands that. He's throwing a bunch of different contradictory statements out there at the same time with full confidence that he can hit those little pockets with each of them. The ones that, if it gets to someone who fact checks it, well, he's been BSing America since the beginning, so they probably have turned against him already. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, maybe there's something like the Midas Touch ad you played earlier that really sets up that Trump doesn't value certain human lives. That was not taken out of context. And it's all a challenge. And the reason that we fact check it is for moments like that. Now, there's also an important other step that the CNN reporter, who I think is utterly delightful, didn't do, which is to follow up and say, now, will you be better, or will you look into everything now? Like, now that one of the things you took for granted has been disproven, how will this change your behavior in the future? As opposed to doing something that I totally understand, and you do that in those interviews, which is he knows he's been had, he knows he's been embarrassed. What are you gonna do about it? Someone else in that same interview is this guy who's amazing, sounds just like Louis Anderson. And he's like, I don't know why I would follow anyone who doesn't agree with me. I got an abortion guy, I got an anti-abortion guy, I got a guy who loves Trump and a guy who loves beer. Why would I go with you guys? You just throw rocks at me. And it's like, I get it. I get it. Well, and that's something that makes, in the moment, it makes you feel good to call someone who you think is an idiot. But the trick of politics is to, and communication in general, is to find a way to communicate those ideas so that they don't feel like a total idiot, and they don't go back in their shell when you finally have an opportunity to communicate with them. And I know the next statement is, well, some of them are so far gone, do you think, is there anything you can do to get through to these people? Well, we don't got to get through to all of them, but what's the harm in doing this on the margins through fact checking and things like this going viral?
So as I alluded to in the intro, I assure you that my point is not for us to just feel better than that person. I literally said, how many Americans are better? And I got news for you, it's not all right wingers, it's not all conservatives. The exact same problems and the exact same sort of real time defense mechanisms against learning and evolving, I think you can find across the political spectrum. It's a lot of what Twitter is, unfortunately. And I thought that you brought up a good point. That would have been a good follow-up question. Will you be better? Will you check things? But what do you think the honest answer is? And not just for him, but for the vast majority of people. I get it. There are some who might be a little bit better, although there's a difference between pointing out that someone has been had and actually training them to not be had in the future. Those are different things. But what that guy said was, when he first realized, and you can see in real time as he realized, he says, well, I wouldn't have doubted it. But isn't that the problem? You didn't doubt it. You should have. If you had, you might not have believed something false. But his defense is to say, I wouldn't have doubted it. And I assume in the future also won't doubt it. Why? Because again, it doesn't matter that it's true. I had a good laugh. I can imagine it happening. But you wanted to live in the world where you weren't just imagining it happening, but it had actually happened. And do you really think that in a week, are you sure that he isn't going to claim that it happened? That some percentage of those who were fact checked won't claim that it happened? Eric Trump was just spreading like a day or two ago, this fake thing, easily debunked, quickly debunked, that implied that Trump, that Biden during a town hall was reading off a teleprompter. It was 100% fake, but how many of his followers are ever gonna learn that? And if they do, will it actually matter?
Well, the answer to that is, I mean, all those things that you're like asking the question about and are like, what's the use? And I know it's not just you, but a lot of people are like, what's the use? On the other side, Republicans see the use. They do it. They continuously find ways to, like I did that. I did a voiceover for Cambridge Analytica unknowingly 1,000 years ago. And I read like the copy, which was, we use psychographic data to get to the, you know, to understand your users more than they understand themselves. And I was like, all right. And I didn't even read it until later I found out it was Cambridge Analytica. But that's how it, that's, they're doing it. They're absolutely doing it. They're finding ways to target audiences. And think about why. Like, think about the way the media landscape is driven. It's driven by Republicans, and this is provable. It's driven by a Republican media apparatus. The number one social media post through the number five every day are all right-wing outlets and maybe TMZ. That's it. Why? Because they share each other's stuff. Ben Shapiro's Daily Wire got in trouble for, and sort of trouble until they got let off on account of it, for essentially violating the terms of service to have a bunch of different outlets tweet the same thing at the same time.
Yeah.
They do that. It's ridiculous. The umpires in mainstream media, essentially, they play those clips and point out that people are mad at those clips. Is it ever that people are happy about the folks who are doing the right, decent thing? No, it's people who are mad at the demagogues on the right. And that's what drives our narrative. And not to mention Trump's rallies drive the narratives. Trump's tweets drive the narratives because it's easy. And the people in the center, the self-proclaimed unbiased media, who both sides things until it's dead, as well as people on the left, just aren't doing all that stuff. And they need to. So you need to have an apparatus that figures out how to micro target things, because those demagogues are, yes, as I said, reaching everyone who is elsewhere in the media. And in the meantime, they're just feeding a bubble of their own users who are sharing it to people who live near them and know them through pictures of their kids and growing that bubble. And that's what's so terrifying.
I'll leave it on that. I do want to make sure that we get to the garbage person of the week that has been nominated by Dragon Squad. It's been up for about a day on the community tab on the Damageport YouTube channel. You can go every Thursday and vote. 13,000 of you did, and this week, with 71% of the vote, a very strong showing, the GOP are garbage people for blatant hypocrisy in regard to filling a Supreme Court seat. That makes all the sense in the world. In second, you have Ron DeSantis at 16% for criminalizing protesting and also potentially legalizing running over protesters. At 10%, the Pentagon for funneling COVID money to defense contractors. And at 3%, the CDC for posting and then taking down COVID information, in particular about the possibility that it could aerosolize and transmit over longer distances than had previously been believed. So thank you to everybody who voted in that. There was a ton of you this time. Really do appreciate that. Brett, happy half hour is coming up later on, as well as another show, right?
Yep, Common Room. Sophie's gonna be on it.
Nice.
She's behind the scenes. She's gonna be in front of the scenes. She'll be among the scenes. And then Alex Jablonski, producer, happy half hour, and editor at TYT, who has edited many of the things you've seen, also will be there with me and John. So after post game today, it's me and Ravi Patel talking about his new show on HBO Max, Pursuit of Happiness, which is a great, great show. And then after that, a little bit later, we're going to be doing Common Room. So that's Twitch, because I love the Twitch audience and they make my world go round.
Exactly. You notably love them almost as much as I do. Everyone go to twitch.tv/TYT and follow it so that you can see both Brett and Sophie and myself on Common Room tonight. Thank you, Brett. You're the best.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.